I'm the president of the FCC and the correspondent of Swiss financial newspaper for Finanz und Wirtschaft. Can I make a couple of announcements before I introduce today's speaker? The director of the labor advocacy group, China Labor Bulletin. So no mobiles, please. And then we have a few events coming here. The next few days, actually tomorrow, it's Ching Ulrich who will speak. She's the managing director and chairman of China, of JP Morgan, covering China equities. And then we have later this month a full range of writers here in the context of the Hong Kong International Literary Festival. Mohammed Hanif, Jonathan Fenby, and Jerry Sias Day. They're very well known in their field. Please come here for this event. The past few years the world has been not very good for labor, has rather been good for capital. This was also seen at this club where financial experts are invited to speak much more often, or have been invited much more often than experts of the labor market. And we'll see tomorrow another kind of real good expert on the financial markets of China. In its economically troubled period, everything tells us that this will change outside and probably also at the club. Where this particularly becomes clear is in China, where the number of labor disputes and strikes have over the course of 1 year increased dramatically. Only 1 year ago, labor laws in China have changed. But after 30 years of economic reforms, the mainland's labor market is far from free. Han Dongfeng, the director of the Hong Kong-based China Labor Bulletin, and today will speak about the wider implications of the restive labor market in the mainland, and the economic implications this has on politics and vice versa. Han, who is one of the world's foremost experts on the Chinese labor movement, came first to international prominence when as a railway worker, he helped to set up the mainland's first independent trade union, the Autonomous Workers Federation. Dongfeng, the floor is yours.
Thank you. The last 20 years since 1989, and people describe me as the person who set up the first independent trade union in China. I have to say, actually, I was the one waving the flag of the independent trade union movement in China. Not really after years traveling in between different countries and learn a lot about the trade unions. Actually, trade union movement is much more than waving a flag of free trade union. There are a lot of detailed things need to be arranged. For example, collective bargaining. That's as the main part of the union work. So just want to clarify that. Actually, just a few days ago, I received a phone call from one of my radio listeners on Radio Free Asia, Mr. Yang. He was working in Shenzhen in the year 2006 for probably half a year or less. He's from Shandong. He worked in a construction site. He got injured. He tried to claim some compensation, and the boss refused to compensate him, but kick him out. So he went to the Shenzhen government, ask for support, get some compensation, the Labor Bureau, and this appeal, Shangfang, Jeff, appeal office? Shangfang. Okay. But all failed. Then one day he went to the Shenzhen government, the main building, and he was standing in front of it, started yelling, yelling something like, overthrow the Communist Party, this government is not a people's government. You know what? He was sentenced 1 year in prison. That was the end of year 2006. And after 1 year serving the sentence, he was released in November 2007, and he went to the government again, tried to get his compensation and justice, and cannot make it. He did the same things. And he was sentenced again. This time it's not a one-year sentence, but it's a one-year re-education through labor. So he just released last year, November, which is 2 months ago. He started calling me. He was my radio listener. So we were trying to get him some legal support, get him a lawyer to claim compensation, but it seems it's too long ago. I don't know whether the legal procedure, whether we can go through it. The reason I'm mentioning this case is, you see, a simple work injury case becomes a one-year sentence and becomes somebody anti-government. It's in between the injury case and the political feeling. The political feeling on the government. There's no much gap in between. So this person, I hope we can settle something, but I'm not sure. And he, on the phone call, he mentioned one thing. He said, my family name is Yang as well, and I hope people remember Yang Jia from Shanghai, and I hope this system will not produce me as the second Yang Jia. So from my daily work, especially on the Radio Free Asia radio program, I'm talking to the workers and farmers constantly, and these kind of expression always happening. And I have several people on my list of being, I'm going to interview them. They have farmers and workers, and including business people whose business being taken away completely without any, thing to say from the local government. They all try to express in the same similar way that describe themselves as a possible Yang Jia. So that's, to me, is quite a kind of a scary things. These cases are not really some individual separate cases. There are many of these cases, and as we know from my own source, and only talk about Pearl River Delta area, those strikes involve more than 1,000 workers happening every day. That means not calculated those strikes, less than 1,000 workers. We're talking about 1,000 workers involved or above. So that's a kind of a quite extraordinary figures. And think about those involved with 100 workers and 200 workers and 500 workers, even several tens of workers for the strikes, or collective action claiming salaries at the government office. So that's a really kind of a scary things. And again, I'm sure people here, most of you heard that information a few days ago. There was another bomb in Shanghai Public Security Bureau. So that's, although we don't know yet what's that about, but we know certainly there has somebody similar from this kind of being treated unfairly. I mean, from the workers' point of view, from the workers' movement point of view, I'm trying to go beyond the workers' movement, beyond the workers' rights, which is in China. We have a 1.3 billion population. We have the world's worst corruption, and we have probably the world's worst, one of the world's worst anger increasing in this society. So we don't have a proper system to make people sit down, whatever the problem you have, big problem, small problem, you hate each other, you like each other, or you dislike each other. I mean, this country, after 30 years reform, and you have definitely more than one or two different interest groups, you have many different things that need to be solved with the peaceful idea, sitting down. And that's why I'm here. I would like to share with people here about the collective bargaining system. Collective bargaining system is, I don't need to talk more about the system itself. It is, to me, definitely, it's a peaceful solution. It's a peaceful system that make the employers and employees can sit down on a regular term, and once a year, once 2 years or 3 years, depends on what kind of industry, what kind of the size of the factory, and you talk about the salary, about working condition and the compensation of holidays, all these things you can settle at the negotiation table. You don't have to push the workers away like Mr. Yang I mentioned at the beginning, just for probably a few thousand Chinese yuan compensation, and then you push somebody into the street, and you push somebody becomes anti-government, that becomes from a pure labor dispute case leading into a political matter. So this is the point I'm trying to make. This country, we need this system. I think collective bargaining system is, to me, is ready in China. Not ready in the sense that the government is completely enforced it. Ready first in the sense that we need it. Earlier we mentioned the strikes happening in Pearl River Delta. The quantity of the strikes, definitely the workers, if they have a collective bargaining system, if they can bargain in the factory level with their bosses, so they wouldn't really go make their problem as a demonstration matter. So that's, the labor dispute level is really showing us it is the time to set up the system. And secondly, even for, not only for the workers' interests, not only for the sake of protecting workers' rights, it's also, we're talking about, let's say, I'm not here representing the government, even if we try to put our foot into the government's shoes, that many demonstrations, that many people are jumping from the labor, compensation case into anti-government kind of a case. For the government's interests, it's better to settle the problem, especially the labor dispute problem, especially the compensation problem in the factory, the workplaces, rather than always come aiming the government. Actually, it's I don't understand the government's mentality. If they understand the market economy in a better way, in a correct way, which is why you don't let the workers and the employers settle their problem. It's basically economical matter. It's about the financial matter. Settle their problem in the factory level, in between them, why you put yourself into the situation as somebody try to block the way for these parties to make a negotiation. So if they can make the negotiation in the workplace, there are, I believe, most of these cases are coming to the government, not necessary. You can prevent them from coming to the government. You can keep them in the factory level, and they can be soft. And that's the government's last particularly 10 years, they keep mentioning the social and political stability. So that is, to me, is at least in the labor relation area, that's the best way to make, what would you say, harmonia society, or to make less of these political instability. When I'm saying ready, on top of this workers' disputes, labor disputes cases and strike cases, and there's also a recognition, I believe, from the central government and the provincial government, basically nearly every level of the government. Just yesterday, 2 days ago, the 1st of February, there's a magazine from Beijing. It's called Qiu Shi magazine. It's the party magazine. There was an article written by the State Council. I don't know how to describe the position. Mi Shu Zhang. How do you say Mi Shu Zhang? The secretary of the State Council, Mr. Ma Kai. He wrote an article in Qiu Shi magazine, highlighted now this year, 2009 and on, in this country we're facing to serious social unrest, and we need to pay more attention. We need to work out, try to solve the problem as early as possible, as close as possible to where the disputes are happening. That means, to me, as a Chinese, reading the Chinese government's mind in between their words, it's really kind of they feel how urgent it is, that the pressure on the government, and also after the Olympic, how much energy they spent on try to keep people away from Beijing. I think the central government, including the provincial government, that they feel that there's a huge pressure from these social disputes. It's the economical dispute turn into political matter. That is definitely not the things they want to see. And from this Mr. Makai's article, you can really read that the central government, state councils, really wish to solve some problem, setting up some system to solve the problem. But you don't read, actually, from his article, the idea. There's no clear idea what kind of system they want to build. He introduced the idea as an emergency management, crisis management issue, rather than setting up a system to prevent the problem from happening. So it's rather after the crisis happened, how to manage it. So, but anyway, from this article, we realize this. And also, year 2008, January 1st, labor contract law, ineffective. But before that and after that, there was a huge debate. Employer side really hate that law. And so the government, after the law being introduced, and start doubting about the law. And some local government officials even saying that we, in our city, for example, Dongguan mayor, used to say, in our city, in Dongguan, we want to postpone the law from practicing. And then you get immediate response from the some of the government affairs from Beijing. It's what is that? Civil, 民政部, how do you say 民政? Civil affairs, thank you. The minister immediately responded, says, no, law has been made and it has to be implemented. You see the differences from local, central, from different government affairs. So, but anyway, about this labor contract law, we, China Labor Bulletin, from year 2005, we start introduce collective contract. At that time, there's no idea of labor contract law yet. We start promoting this, and we were very happy to see that the government passed this law. Particularly, in our opinion, the entire law not very much big things, but only one chapter, which is about collective contract. So our interpretation about the collective contract means if you recognize the collective contract as a legitimate matter in the workplace, so you have to recognize the way to produce collective contract, which is collective bargaining. If you recognize the right to collective bargaining, you have to recognize the workers' rights to elect for representatives. Otherwise, there will be no collective contract whatsoever. So that's the main part we appreciate about the labor contract law. And the entire, I mean, before October last year, the Central ACFTU and the Guangdong ACFTU, in particular these two, they were really trying to push for the collective bargaining pilot program, which is try to see how to make collective bargaining in the workplace. In Shenzhen, I've heard they even set up their year 2009 goal as to complete 4,000 collective bargaining cases. Well, to me, when I first heard it, I was laughing. I said, these people don't know what is collective bargaining. How can you just set a figure for 4,000 collective bargaining with the trade union? You have no even one single union in the workplace elected by the workers and knows how to bargain, and how can you do this? So obviously they have their kind of a mentality, but in general the idea itself, collective bargaining idea, is being recognized from different level, from different sectors. Here I have Nanfang Ribao, the Southern Daily report last year, November 22nd or 23rd. So they quoted the Guangdong Provincial Trade Union president. He announced to the media, he said, we want to postpone the collective bargaining and the salary negotiation program. And once he announced it, and this Southern Daily received many of these readers' call and says, this is outrageous, this is stupid, and how can you have this idea to solve the financial crisis, to stop collective bargaining? And that's how many years that the workers from the factory finally get this tool, useful tool, to negotiate with the boss, and now the financial crisis happened, and you just let go. That's, I mean, few days after this Guangdong Provincial Union had been interviewed again by the same reporter, he immediately tried to make a bit smooth turn. He said, oh, no, we don't mean to stop it completely, but what we say is only in those factories, they are in really, really difficult situations. So we will postpone it only in those few difficult factories. So to me, it's obviously that this person realized after the journalist interviewed him again, that he realized that the reaction from the workers, from the public, is extremely negative. So from this report, my understanding is, is another important element when I say it is ready to introduce collective bargaining system, which is the public awareness. Even only in Guangdong province, and people are aware the right to bargain, and they already get the idea if you bargain, you can have a better relationship or better protection for the workers' rights. So from the number of strikes and the labor disputes, the level of labor disputes from the central government and provincial government and official trade unions' reaction on this collective bargaining system, and from the public awareness. And I really, it's my understanding that it is ready, and it is also that the China Labor Bulletin is the next few years a main target to implement, introduce this new system. Thank you.
Any questions from the floor? Mm-hmm. Keith, please. Bradshaw. Oh.
I wasn't raising my hand.
Oh, I'm sorry.
How different is what's happening in Guangdong from what's happening in the interior? That is, for example, worker awareness much greater in Guangdong of legal rights, or do you have a much more even level of awareness across the country as a result of migrant workers going home to communities across the country and mentioning some of the things they've heard in Guangdong?
I think these days China has changed a lot. Still you need word of mouth to circulating the ideas and the information, but I think in general the governments the last few years, let's say 5 years or so, from different levels, central and local governments, they have tried quite hard to raise the awareness of workers' rights, and they make the laws and the labor contract law, the consultation period. Really, it was a very important element, I think, in China's lawmaking history after 1949. I would say the government has done some work to make positive results to raise the public awareness and the workers' rights. But in the same time, you have two ways to think about that, talk about the question. One is comparing the Guangdong and the other areas. Guangdong, the workers in Guangdong are migrant workers. They come from their local town, local cities and villages. So they are the, how can we say that, this word? They are not afraid to come out. They are the people who want to come out to explore opportunities. Therefore, in my opinion, those people gathering in Guangdong, they have these characters. They want to see new things. Their minds are much more active. So therefore, in Guangdong, you have more active-minded people, and they have more awareness of their rights, or easier to be aware what is happening. And the other thing is what I just mentioned. In general, you compare with 5, 6, 7 years ago, all over China, is also the workers' rights awareness gets much higher. You have the workers from not only the migrant workers, also the retired workers. If you don't get enough the retirement, or those workers who were kicked out from the state-owned enterprises during the process of reform, and those people, if you read what they said, year 2002, 2003, they were the different language they are talking about. At that time, they were talking about themselves as purely innocent, helpless, and need the government to help them. And even there were many demonstrations, but it's different than today. Now you see a lot of these people, they are taking legal actions. They are hiring lawyers. They use the laws to protect themselves. That, to me, is a huge differences from begging the administrative power to involve into this process to protect them, develop into try to use laws by themselves, hiring lawyers or even filing lawsuits by themselves. So that's a very significant differences.
Could you identify yourself, please?
Yeah, I'm Nicholas Becklin. I work with Human Rights Watch. Dongfeng, you made a very good case that China lacks dispute resolution mechanism and that it is contributing to social unrest. I think the statistics for 2007 were 90,000 incidents, mass incidents. But how do you think the current economic downturn is going to affect the prospect of reform for labor rights? Now that there will be much more intense competition amongst workers to get jobs. And now that the party is particularly concerned about any signs of social unrest, how likely is this that we're going to see the kind of progress that you've described for the past 5 to 10 years, especially given that you seem to have also a slowdown of legal reform? How can collective bargaining works for workers if you don't have a legal system that functions well to support it?
Thank you, Nicola. I think collective bargaining, to me, strike is a kind of bargaining collectively. Even it's not on the table, but it is one form of bargain. Usually, if you have a system of collective bargaining, that should be the last part of the bargaining process. You do it on the table first, you cannot make it, one go and second and third, and then you decide to go on strike. And sometimes you have a kind of a warning strike, that's at the beginning. But in general, strikes is not only for the sake of strikes. Strikes are always about something else. That, to me, is a bargaining. And as I mentioned earlier, the strikes in China, particularly in Guangdong, not only in Guangdong, it becomes a common understanding in the workplace for the workers in China. It's different than 5 or 10 years ago. Strike was kind of a serious crime. 10 years ago, if you organize strike, the leaders and organizers, or the active people even only, they're not necessarily the main organizers, they will be in prison, absolutely, no question. And these days, if you look at Guangdong province and also many other provinces, if you have strikes, and the local government, they sometimes send the police there, but not arrest people, and try to maintain the order, to push them out from the traffic, and in the same time, they try to engage with the employer and see what's the problem. They get the labor bureau here, try to solve the problem, settle the problem. So that's so you can see the government behavior is different than before. But I wouldn't, well, even I do give some credit to the government, because they do change their behavior. But in the same time, I would say without the workers' push for the last many years with their own action, particularly the strikes, and the government will not automatically understand this. The strikes should be accepted. You shouldn't arrest these strike leaders. So therefore, the same reason, because of this, the workers' awareness, the workers are taking actions. As a result, the government's behavior already being changed by the workers' pressure, the massive workers' strikes. So the environment we're talking about is different than before. I'm not saying it will be perfect environment to implement a collective bargaining. There will be some difficulties. So for example, the government understanding about collective bargaining related to the financial crisis, and their idea is to stop it. Just from last November, they tried to stop it. Also, the Beijing ACFTU announced that they will stop the collective bargaining exploration. So even their idea, their reaction is a bit strange, not seems the right one, but they got this. And particularly, let's say in Guangdong, the last year, the first probably 9 months, something, the last year, there are many people talking about collective bargaining on the media, on the newspaper, even the official people. The official union people were talking about the right to strike. We don't need to worry about strike. It's supposed to be normal. All these things, it's not possible for the switch of the government policy when after the financial crisis, this idea is impossible to be erased from people's minds. So I believe the workers will keep go on strike because the factories, there are factories keep going on, and not all the factories closed. So I think as long as the workers are keep still working there, still have these requests, I think there will be a day. It's a bit difficult than before, but it will be there.
Question here? Yes? Yep.
Oh.
Yeah, well, you're first, yes, and then gentleman behind you.
Yeah, Pierre Chiu from Phoenix TV. Yeah, yesterday Beijing released a figure saying that there will be, I don't know whether they are already or there will be 20 million of jobless migrant workers. So the question is what to do and how to deal with jobless migrant workers. Is there any system dealing with these migrant workers? Or is there anything what the international community can do or China Labour Britain can do for these people? Under which condition will these jobless migrant workers go to social unrest? Because it's a huge figure, 20 million.
Yeah, that's right, 20 million. It is a huge figure, but compared with, I mean, based on China's population, it's not really that big. And also, the workers, 20 million people, basically, they most of them come from east, southeast coast area. They are not going to one place or two places. They go like this. They're separated. They're back home, basically. And I don't really see, this is my opinion, I don't really see the huge threat of that on the social instability or political instability because, first of all, they're not together. And secondly, they're not organized. Thirdly, they're looking for jobs, not asking for rights within the job. So it's their demands is more, it's a less concrete toward the government. It's a burden in general as an employment problem, but not as a concrete threat aiming the government. It's in my opinion, and I realize also the government is trying to use two things. One is to reform the the land policy to give more flexibility to try to make people or possible or easier to resettle at home. But I don't think that will work out because these people, they work outside many years. They come back home temporarily. They will never resettle again on their land. They will definitely go out. So that land reform policy, rather as a long-term thing. And also I realize there are some local governments try to relocate some money to create some local job opportunities to boost up some local county level or city level kind of economy to take these unemployment from local. But also I don't see there's immediate impact on that because once the economy goes better and these people will go out again, their wish is not resettled at home. So that's I don't have a better idea. And with these two ideas, I think they're positive ideas, but just not immediate. You don't see immediate result.
Yes, please.
Hi. This is James Peng of Bloomberg News. I have two questions. First, what's the prospect of China's human rights situation? Second, now that China is also aware of this, is facing the toughest year in social unrest this year. So can it get away with it smoothly? Why? Thank you.
I don't think China will have chance to get away from this social unrest and political unrest smoothly because, one, the government mentality. They see themselves as the opposite of everybody. And they don't see themselves as including themselves into everything. So that's a mentality problem. And if you don't solve this mentality problem, you always put yourself into the wrong place. And when you make a policy and you don't really get it right, for example, the financial crisis, how can you stop review the minimum wages? And the minimum wages is about it's not necessarily the minimum wages all the way goes up. You can review it. It's my opinion, right? If the deflation goes really, really low, and the economy situation is really bad, and the minimum wage can go lower than last year, not necessarily higher all the time, what's the reason to stop review this? And that's a it's rather government provides a figure based on, the survey. It's not something else, but their way of thinking is just like that. And also, another example is after the crisis, the trade union reaction is to stop the bargaining. I really don't understand this. And just because, for example, a factory, you have financial problem, you can't get bank loan. Because it's not your fault. It's someone else in the United States, a toy factory, a toy company bankrupt. So your product, the quality is good, and your management is good, everything's good. But that company bankrupt, and you have no cash. So what you need is just hang on. But bank wouldn't give you money. And if the boss provide bank one more document, for example, a new collect the contract with the workers' representative, says, we temporarily agreed with the workers in my factory to lower the salary for 10% for the next year, the difficult moment. And once we make profit again, and we will compensate them back at a certain level. If you produce that things to the bank, I think you will get better chance to get bank loan. But instead, the government decided to stop the pilot program even. This is the mentality problem, and they put themselves as the opposite of everybody. And second is self-confidence. The government has not enough self-confidence, and they, whenever there's some crisis happen, or likely crisis happen, or they're predicting some crisis happen, and they try they first be afraid. When you have this fear there, like when we know dogs, they bite because they are afraid. So because they're afraid, they bite. So the same mentality, I would say, to human being, if you're afraid, you bite. You react differently, not in a relaxing way. And the other thing is I will get back later, probably. In general, the human rights, including what we say, the Tibetan problem and the Uyghur problem, and these are the most sensitive ones compared with the labor problem. So, the Uyghurs, the Tibetans, they don't see the chance to have negotiation with the central government. When you don't see the chance, what you do? You do anything you can to highlight your own issue. So during the Olympics, the Tibetan, they did really great job to highlight their issue around the world, but it wouldn't be the happiest things for the Chinese government to see that. So that's another thing you can say, that in this country, for human rights issue, the ethnic issue, labor issue, and the land issue, corruption issue, all these issues, politically and socially, you do need to introduce a new culture, not as a management, top-down management way, but rather give
the room to the public, to those people who are having the problem, in the problem, they solve problem by themselves. So that's why when I say the collective bargaining system in the workplace is not only about the workers' rights, it's not only about labor relations, it's much broader. If we can introduce the bargaining idea into this country via the labor dispute, I would say, well, why not? China will have basic democracy after we succeeded in the factory-level bargaining system.
One last question here. Over there, yeah. So, and then
okay.
We're slightly over time already.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. I'm Karin Malmstrom with the Cotton Council. I'm related to the textile and garment industry in China. And you're saying all about mentality, collective bargaining. Now, doesn't that fly right in the face of what the Chinese leadership are most fearful of? And that is masses of people getting together, not particularly on their side. You know, all of these things, Falun Gong, everything, they immediately shut it down. There was no discussion, right? So my question is, how in the world do you aim to achieve this, and on what level? Because as you know, China is many, many different locales, regions, and laws are enacted in very different ways on different levels in different provinces. So you have at the local level, then you have all these different kinds of factories. You've got the shadow factories. Now, those are the ones that are probably not complying. U.S. Industry usually goes with the factories that are so-called in compliance with workers' laws, the legal aspect of it. But there's so many elements in here. I find it very difficult to, I would say, I mean, you've got an uphill battle in my mind, because how can you change their mentality? You say it's a mentality problem, but that's the crux of the whole thing. It's the crux of everything, Tibet, everything. So how do you do it?
Well, if anyone tell you they have the idea about that in general, that's a liar, I would say. No one, you're right, no one have an idea how to solve the problem in China. It's too huge, and it's too many. And that's why I'm not trying to persuade the Chinese government to negotiate with Falun Gong. I'm not trying to persuade them to negotiate with, yes, I do try to suggest them to negotiate with Dalai Lama. He's really, really kind of a, I respect him a lot. And but I want to do something to make difference in my area, the area that I can reach, which is the workplace. The workplace bargaining is basically, you can say, nothing to do with the government. If you only something to do with you, if you're blocking it, you channel this problem to yourself as a government. If you let go, it's the business in between the workers and employer. They will solve their problem, and the government is rather sitting in the middle. It's higher than them. So you get yourself out of trouble as a middleman making judgment. So you just need to implement the laws. So this is what I'm trying to change, if you use that word, change the government mentality by telling them there are some areas, for example, the labor relations, you can get out of it, and don't put yourself in the middle of it, and in the middle of the fight, and don't take position, and let people solve the problem by themselves. So that, again, it's a long journey, even in a workplace, to implement collective bargaining. It's not only the government mentality, it's also the workers' mentality, also the employers' mentality. And the many of these things that we have to start from actually below zero. It's not easy, but I believe this is the way we should go in this area. That's the most I can contribute to the labor movement, the workers' rights in general in my country, the future, let's say, sustainable and stable development.
Allow me one last quick question. You made a very compelling argument why it's in the interest of the employers and the employees to have a collective bargaining. In China now, you have very productive modern companies coming up there. Do you see that you find labor now finds allies in from the company level to push forward towards reform, towards collective bargaining on an institutional level where the people who who do the bargaining actually are have a mandate, the elected mandate?
At the beginning, 2 years ago or three, we tried to approach different companies, multinational companies, and some of them they have factories in China. Most of them, they were interested in our idea, but when we talk about, can we have something concrete in your factory to try it? Even we promise, as a pilot program, if it's not succeeded, because you are willing to be part of it, and we're not going to, even there's not some unhappy things, we wouldn't go blow into the media. You know what? No, none of them, they would like to go with us to be the first one. And then I learned a lesson, which is quite important. You cannot wish that the company bosses and owners and the managers, they do this bargaining voluntarily. And there are something else need to be done. My understanding is the organized workers, which is we already have there. It's not me, the one. It's not China Liberal Bulletin, the one organized this. It's the workers themselves, which is strikes. It's happening daily. And what we are trying to do is if we, through our, by the way, China Liberal Bulletin, we have a program called a labor rights litigation program. We hire lawyers to represent workers in China to claim compensation, all these things. Through our legal program, if we have any chance to see these strike cases, we would like to assist the workers who are on strike to see whether we can succeed to help the workers to request for collective bargaining with the employer. Instead of directly go to the court to make a lawsuit. Well, we were always ready to go make a lawsuit, but this can be a good opportunity to introduce the bargaining idea to solve the problem within the factory, even ready for the lawsuit.
Thank you very much, Han Dongfeng. Before we let you go, a small token of appreciation from the FCC.
Oh.
Thank you very much for coming.